Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. Interested in building wealth? Well, everyone knows what an entrepreneur is, but how about a solopreneur? My guest today is Liz J. Steble, president of the consulting firm ProCo and author of Succeeding as a Solopreneur, Six Keys to Taking the Leap, Winning Clients and Building Wealth, available on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and all the usual places. For everything about Liz, go to sixkeys.info, sixkeys.info, and you can follow her on LinkedIn and X. And Liz, welcome to the show.
Hi, welcome. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Well, we have to start off with this term because I had never heard about it until I heard of you. Solopreneur, what is that? How does that differ from an entrepreneur?
Well, of course, there's some similarities in that they're both about building and launching businesses. The difference is that as a solopreneur, you're not interested in having employees. You know, a lot of times people start as an individual and then they bring on employees and they want to be a boutique agency or a small business or a large business. But in the case of solopreneurs, they really just want to do the work that they love, make a good living, and call it a day.
I like that concept. I guess I have subscribed to your philosophy without realizing it because I never really wanted to have a big business with X amount of employees. I just wanted to be able to function. But if it's solely up to you, what happens when you get sick or you oversleep or you're on vacation? How does all of that work?
Yeah, that's part of the challenge. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book. It's not that easy. In fact, I often try to talk people out of it. It's the toughest job you'll ever have, because you have to push your boundaries and there is no fallback plan. I remember once I was leading about to lead a webinar, and I came down to my office and about an hour before and the internet wasn't working. So I rebooted the router, right. And sure enough, router was dead. I'm like, well, I don't have time to go to Best Buy and fiddle with all this. So now what am I going to do? So I whipped out my iPhone and said, you know, free Wi-Fi near me, grabbed my laptop, went to a nearby coffee shop, and I did the webinar from there. Now, when you're self-employed, there's no IT help desk. You have to figure things out on your own. So it can definitely be stressful. And you mentioned vacations, Ira. Vacations are twice as expensive when you're self-employed because you have to, there's the cost of going to Hawaii or wherever you're going, but there's also the opportunity cost of not working or billing during the time that you're taking off.
That's true. I was wondering if you created, before we started, I have a little checklist I go through with all of my guests. Do you have a checklist for solopreneurs so they know, as an example, and you learn all the time, when all of a sudden your router died, you know, okay, how do I resolve this? And then your checklist says, okay, check for local free Wi-Fi, get on down to that coffee shop, plug in the laptop and go.
As a former private pilot, I'm a fan of checklists, but I don't have one for emergencies like that.
Well, but there's an idea.
I did write the book Six Keys to Success, so at least I did put some formula in there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if you might share with us some of the keys to success, and how does it differ? Again, I have to go back to the entrepreneurial, because I really like your explanation, the solopreneur. It's all on you, and there's pluses and minuses. So clearly for you and for others that pursue what you're recommending, or not recommending, but what you're writing about, is that it's all on you and all of the glory is all on you and all of the expense and disasters are on you as well.
Yes, that's true. But it also can be the, as you probably know, it can also be the most rewarding job you'll ever have because you're doing the work that you love. You're not dealing with the corporate politics or big firm BS. And you really can have more control of your time. You know, like I tend to work Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, middle of the day. I try to not schedule meetings on Mondays and Fridays. And it's just an easier pace of life.
That's interesting because I got the impression that you're working 24/7. But if anything, you're working less than a typical 40-hour week.
Well, it depends on the type of work you do, where you are in your life cycle, et cetera, right? Like I'm towards the latter half of my career, no doubt about that. But yes, you can definitely work 7 days a week. I think there's an old phrase that says you can work any 40 hours a week you want, as long as it's 7 days a week or something. I forget what that phrase is.
It's an interesting dilemma in that sense, because especially if you're passionate about what you do, but at the same time, you're realistic. You don't want to overdo your physical capacity. You don't want to overdo your brain capacity. You want to make sure you get enough sleep. You want to make sure you eat right and you exercise and you have outside social relationships, and all of that has to key yes. into it. Otherwise, you become very driven. And I've met driven people who are somewhat one-dimensional. I would use that term. Do you encounter yes. those kind of people too?
Yes, workaholics actually was the term I yes. grew up with. My father was a workaholic, and I've been accused of being that way myself in prior iterations of my career. And there are plenty of examples in the book of my own stories and those of other consultants who, you know, you just can't keep going. What do? How do you push through?
And that's always the challenge, isn't it? Because you're pushing through uncertainty, you're pushing through fear, you're pushing through fatigue in some cases, especially yes. like you mentioned, as you've been doing it a while, you don't have the stamina or the energy that one would have in their 20s or 30s.
Ira, you mentioned uncertainty and fear, and actually that's the first key in the book is be prepared to vanquish FUD, which is fear, uncertainty, and doubt. I always think of this as, I call it the FUD monster, and I picture this creature on my shoulder nibbling away at my confidence. And we've all had this from time to time. Some people call it imposter syndrome. Oh, who do you think you are to be able to launch your own business? You don't know anything about launching a business. You don't know how to price your services. You don't know how to write a contract. You don't know how to good negotiate. And all of that chips away at your confidence. And so when you're first starting out, of course, it's larger than life. And this is why many people, I think the number is 57% of Americans would have an idea for the business, but 33% would rather skydive or something. because of that FUD,
right.
the fear, right. uncertainty, and doubt. Now, I've been self-employed 20 years, and I still get FUD from time to time. It never fully goes away, but you can mitigate it. You learn to like manage it and tame it and say, okay, I know you're there to protect me, but I'm going to do this anyway. I've done the research. I can do this. And it does tend to shrink and dissipate. But yes, fear, uncertainty, and doubt is a constant of being self-employed.
How do you handle it if you're neurotic and you just can't get organized in your head? Because that would be really hard for a solopreneur if you're neurotic and you can't stay on task. You can't concentrate on doing whatever you're doing in the consulting world or in some other kind of world.
I heard you bring up a good point. From my other organization, I have an educational organization called the Professional Independent Consultants of America. And I was coaching a very well-established executive, and he had been in high tech for 20 some odd years. And now he was stepping into solopreneurship, and he suffered from what I call the shiny object syndrome. He was in my boot camp, and he had homework. You know, every other week we met as a cohort, and he had to do his homework. And he never had his stuff done. And, you know, one week he was supposed to work on his website. He says, well, I got really distracted by, you know, enhancing the website I have for my real estate investment business. Long story short, 6 months later, he ended up going back to a full-time job. He just didn't have the focus to be able to, even with the structure of a boot camp and homework, he still could not work through it. He needed the structure of you know, quarterly business reviews and weekly meetings with his team. And he needed the structure. So being self-employed is not for everybody.
Yeah. And I guess that's the big point of your book. For people who are thinking about it, read the book so that you can decide whether this is for you or not. Can you address these issues? Because I think you're right. There are people who are much more comfortable in the workforce working for it could be a small company, it could be a major corporation. But the point is that they're working in a very structured environment, 40 hours a week, usually, unless you're in management. And then sometimes even in management, 40 hours to 50 hours a week, you're not dealing with stuff when you get home. You have a home life. When you're a solopreneur or entrepreneur, it's different because things can come up. For example, you may get a call from a client of yours, and it's normal time for them wherever they're calling you from, but you have already called it a day. So you still have to address the issue because they're a client and they may have an issue you have to work out.
Yes, there is no, everybody says, well, I want to be self-employed so I have more control over my time and yeah. I can pick and choose my clients. Okay, to some extent, that's true. But if you're really providing good client service and the client has an emergency and it's a, you know, Friday night at 8 p.m., yeah, I will handle it. And that's what leads to referrals and repeat business. Now, there are ways to mitigate those types of emergencies. I think there's a story in the book called, I call it Have a Wow Meeting, a Ways of Working Meeting. But when you first start, you say, okay, I'm a single mom. I don't work between the hours of 5 and 9 p.m. That's time for my kid. When she's in bed, I'll be back online and you'll get emails from me at 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. That's just how I roll. And so there are ways to mitigate some of those emergencies and manage client expectations.
What are some of the things to think about before obviously deciding to run your own business? We talked about FUD, but there's other issues too that you have to really think through. There's, for me, for example, paperwork drives me nuts. I hate paperwork.
Yes.
It's the most non-creative aspect of any business or just life in general. Filling out forms drives me nuts. I hate filling out forms. I like to hire somebody full time to fill out any form I have to fill out. Online, offline, it doesn't matter. It's just, oh no, a linear situation here. It's a form.
And that's one of the keys to success, actually, is to figure out what it is that you hate to do and or not are not good at and outsource it. Hire mm-hmm. somebody else to do it, not necessarily as an employee, right? Because then you wouldn't necessarily be a solopreneur. But for example, I have a part-time assistant. I pay her on a 1099 basis. She's a contract worker, but I would be lost without her to do things like fill out my forms.
So you trust her with your information so she knows to fill out the form correctly.
She has all my information. Right. She's got my master password, all my other passwords. She logs in as me and various places. And it's the only way that I can continue to expand my business without having to do it all myself.
Okay, let's flip that for a second. What this independent contractor you have who is your assistant on an ongoing basis, what is it that she enjoys about doing those things that you absolutely hate and that I hate? What is it about people who can do that and not be put off by it? Maybe they don't enjoy it, but they're not stymied by it either.
Well, you know, we all have different personalities and different work styles. For example, one of the first things I ever outsourced was accounting. I am terrible at accounting, despite having an MBA. I used to manage my own books when I first started out as an independent consultant, and I would track everything in Quicken. I'd use categories, everything, no problem.
Right.
But twice, I would put it in Quicken that I had transferred money from the business to my personal account. Mm-hmm. Twice, I forgot to actually transfer the money. Oh. And I said, okay, this is a problem. I need to hire somebody to do this.
Right.
But there are people out there that love keeping track of the money. And in the case of my assistant, she's the type of person who doesn't like to be front and center and in the spotlight. She prefers to keep everything running smoothly in the background, and this is what makes her happy. So it's a perfect match.
Yeah, it's a win-win situation, to use a terrible cliche, but it's apropos in this kind of situation. What do you see people doing when they first set up their business? What's a mistake that, or more than one mistake that people tend to do? Do they not think out a business plan? Do they forget to do one element that they should always put front and center, maybe carving out time for themselves or filing the paperwork, whatever it happens to be?
Indeed, there are a lot of mistakes. Of course, if you follow the six keys, you'll avoid a lot of them.
Right.
But the two biggest mistakes I see people make, one is how they go to market or their positioning, and the other is their pricing. So let's talk about both of those. The first is, a lot of times people think, okay, I'm going to go to market as what's known as a jack of all trades, because then I'll be available for more opportunities. But if you put yourself in the client's shoes, they don't want to hire a jack of all trades. They want to hire an expert to solve their problem. So I've through my main company, the Proco Consulting Agency, I recommend some of the world's best consultants. And the ones that win the most work are the ones that have a very specific niche, because I can with confidence tell clients, you need to talk to Deborah Glenn because she's the expert in org design, particularly within the high tech space. She's the person that you want. So the more you can define your niche and how you help clients or how you help people, the more likely you'll win more work. So that's that's the first mistake.
Yeah, let me play devil's advocate though. What happens when, just as the horse and buggy went away and cars came in, if you have an expert or specialist in one thing as a consultant, but that goes away. What happens to that consultant? They have to learn something totally new.
That's an excellent point. You have to pick, it's hard to pick your niche. I run a whole workshop on it. There has to be a market for it, right? You could be the world's best person at underwater basket weaving, Ira, but if there's no market for it, you're not going to make a living.
I found that out a few months ago. Yes.
So it is difficult to pick a niche. Things don't really change overnight. You know, sure, even when the horse and buggy, the cars replaced the horse and buggy and the buggy whip manufacturers went out of business, that didn't happen overnight. It took some time. And when you're self-employed, you'll notice that demand for certain parts of your skill set are waning, and it might be time to start shifting and focusing on something else. And even subconsciously, even without the market shifts, you'll notice that there's more demand for you in certain areas than others. There's a consulting guru that I admire. His name is David A. Fields. He calls it going to where the fish are, right? You got to go to the pond where there's enough fish. So that's another key part of figuring out what your niche is, how you go to market. You got to make sure there's enough clients that want the services that you provide.
Is an age a factor? Because we talked earlier about your career and how long you've been doing it and stuff, but is it ever too late for someone to start on this road to being a solopreneur?
No, actually, I think I coach a lot of people through the Professional Independent Consultants of America. A lot of people could retire, have retired, but don't want to. Right? They've got enough money. In fact, there's a story in the book. I was coaching the former president of Sony Electronics, and he had been retired about 6 months and he was bored out of his mind. He's like, I played enough golf. And he says, I just have a lot more to offer, but I don't quite know what and how to do it. Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of people who are saying, you know, retirement is, you know, that's fine, but I'd like to continue to give back or make a difference or make enough money for my next cruise or whatever the situation is. Right. And so you don't have to do it full time. These people often just do like executive coaching roles or board roles or consulting on a small basis. Another thing that's very popular now is called fractional leadership. So fractional leadership is for startups and smaller companies that can't afford, for example, a full-time head of HR. Instead, they'll hire one of these seasoned professionals for one day a week.
And as an independent contractor?
Exactly. As an independent.
Oh, interesting. So almost like when you're a fractional owner of an airplane, you don't own the whole airplane, you own part of it. And so in this case, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How important is it being honest with yourself? And the reason I asked that question, the example you just gave of somebody says, well, I retired, but I feel like I still want to give back. In fact, do they want to get back, or is it really more, hey, I don't want to go crazy just playing golf all the time. I've got to do something that's going to be stimulating. It's not necessarily, I want to give back to the community or I want to give back to the industry. It may be more, and perfectly fine, more selfish in that sense. I just need to keep from going crazy by not doing stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the motivations differ. And I have a popular blog that's actually called SuccessfulIndependentConsulting.com. I don't know. I like things with a lot of syllables. But anyway, SuccessfulIndependentConsulting.com. And there's a blog on there that says every solopreneur should know their why. So why are you, before you do anything, why are you doing this? What's your motivation? Who do you want to serve? Why are you doing this? Because when it gets tough, and there are days that it is hard or weeks that it's hard, that's your North Star document. You go back to that and you're like, oh yeah, this is why I decided to do this. And it's
I like
short.
That. I like that question because it can simply be, I want to do this because as I mentioned earlier, I don't want to go crazy just golfing all the time. Or it could be a sense of self-worth or maintaining a sense of self-worth or just seeming to be useful within to myself. So it could be all internal rather than external, but it's still a valid reason why they want to do something.
Yes, absolutely.
And do you encourage that when you're consulting with clients and to go to that why question? I know you mentioned it in the blog, but I mean, is that part of your own checklist with clients when you sit down with people and you're coaching them? Ask yourself why?
Yes, often. In fact, I hold office hours once a week where people drop in, just like in college, to talk to the professor. And I had somebody in there the other day, and we were talking about her niche, and she couldn't get the words right. And I said, have you done that exercise where you clearly define the why you want to do this and who you're going to be serving? And she's like, no, I haven't done that yet. So it's pretty foundational, because it shapes the type of work you want to do, how you want to position yourself. You know, maybe you want to work one day a week and do the fractional executive thing, or maybe you want to do coaching lots of people over time, or it makes a difference to have that clarity.
When you say office hours, are you talking about virtual office hours, or people actually come by and see you?
Yeah, virtual office hours. Okay. Yeah, I have a Zoom room, and this is for people who are members of that organization, the Professional right. Independent Consultants of America. Yeah, they drop in maybe for an hour, or maybe for just 10 minutes. Sometimes they have something specific, like, hey, can you look at my new LinkedIn profile, or can you review my website? And sometimes I have people come in and they'll just say, I have FUD and I'm stuck and I don't know what to do.
Well, I figured it might be virtual, because I can't imagine people knocking on your door during that time saying, oh, yeah, I was in the neighborhood, so I wanted to come by and talk to you about stuff. So,
especially not up here in Reno, Nevada. There's not that many people in the neighborhood.
How about in your book, you talk about paying less tax. One of the keys to success, paying less tax. How does one go about paying less tax? Probably it could be one way of approaching it, which is to earn less. But that's not what you're saying, is it?
No, gosh, no.
Because if I earn less, I don't have to pay as much tax. So, okay.
Well, that's true, but no, that wouldn't be.
Well, that's from my organization, Self-Defeating Individuals of America.
So, yeah, exactly.
.com.
No, the paying less tax ties to building wealth, right? So you have to grow the top line and at the same time. No, I this is one of my most adamant points for people who are self-employed, is there's something in it. Okay, let's back up for a second.
Sure.
There's two ways to be paid in America, right? As an employee or temporary employee on a W-2 basis, mm-hmm. or as an independent contractor, a business-to-business basis on a 1099 basis. When you're paid on a 1099 business-to-business basis, you can take business owner tax deductions on your tax return. So that's a big part. And the other thing is, you have different options for retirement plans that are much better than a traditional 401k. So the more money you can siphon into these retirement options, like a health savings account, or solo 401k, or SEP IRA, that's the goose that lays the golden eggs, because you're paying yourself, you're investing it for your own retirement, and that's how you're lowering your effective tax rate. One year I did my taxes just for fun. Well, I didn't. My partner Henry did. Two different ways in TurboTax. One was my actual tax return with all my 1099 income. And I said, well, what if I had been working through an agency on a temporary W-2 basis and contributed to the 401k and maxed that out? So he ran the numbers again. He says, well, you saved $8,000 in tax by being self-employed and being paid on the 1099 and doing what you did. Mm-hmm. And I said, $8,000? That's a vacation to Europe. I'm like,
exactly.
So we feel so strongly about this. We actually trademarked the phrase, friends don't let friends W-2.
Unless they absolutely have to, I guess. And that's it. Mm-hmm. You mentioned on LinkedIn and social media in general, how important is a place in social media in terms of one's business? So you could be, I know you mentioned specifically LinkedIn as one of them, and the people can follow you on LinkedIn as well. Why LinkedIn versus Facebook or X or any other social media, Instagram, et cetera?
It does depend on the type of work you do, but the reason why I am so adamant about LinkedIn being what I call your storefront window is that when you do a Google search on your name, if you have a LinkedIn profile, it's going to be one of the top three results that pops up. Hmm. So if you've been referred to somebody, all right, let's say you've been referred to somebody as an executive coach or a financial planner.
Right.
And they're like, well, who is this guy? And they do a Google search link. They're going to go to LinkedIn. And so that's why LinkedIn is so important. Also, it depends on who your clients are, though. If you're a solopreneur and you specialize in interior design, Instagram might be your choice because you can show photos of different home elements or design choices, or it's a more visual business. So Instagram would be a more appropriate emphasis.
Although you can show photos and videos on LinkedIn, but you're right, Instagram is primarily visual.
Yes, exactly. Most people that I work with or that I coach, and most solopreneurs I know are either executive coaches, financial planners, or independent consultants, or even these fractional executives, if you will. And so they're working more in corporate America, and LinkedIn is where that type of work happens. I do want to point out, though, I was coaching somebody the other day, and she's in Minnesota. She's actually in Milwaukee. And she says, you know, sometimes they call this small walkie because it's all about who you know and the network here in Milwaukee. And she focuses on helping small to mid-sized businesses with their strategic planning and growth. And I said, you know, small business owners probably aren't on LinkedIn very much. They are probably at Chamber of Commerce meetings or local networking things. And that's probably where you're going to find your people.
One last thing before I let you go. It is a world these days, it seems to be, of consultants and entrepreneurs. And I like the fractional executive approach as well. But how do you distinguish yourself as a consultant or solopreneur when there are so many others out there trying to do the same exact thing?
Yes, that's why I call it know your niche. It's the old phrase, which was invented, I think, in the 90s. Tom Peters might have even invented it, I'm not sure, called personal branding. And I hate the phrase. It sounds very fluffy, but it's true. You have to be memorable and be known for something. There has to be something about you that makes you so memorable. So like Ira, for you, it's like bagels, right?
Exactly. And for you, it's obviously a solopreneur.
Solopreneurs, yes. And the hashtag that I use most frequently on social media or where my blogs or whatever is solopreneur success.
Yes. Yeah, I like that. Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Liz J. Steble, president of the consulting firm Proko, that's P-R-O-K-O, and author of Succeeding as a Solopreneur, 6 Keys to Taking the Leap, Winning Clients, and Building Wealth. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about Liz, go to 6keys.info, 6keys.info, and follow her on LinkedIn and X. And Liz, thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure, Ira.
And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.